So good morning, everyone. There are three reasons that I could think of that are special today. Who can tell me one of them?
The codicil.
The codicil, okay.
The first day.
Right. Yeah, you might have already talked about this in the morning. So today's the first day of the last five remaining days of Kartik, which are called Bhishma Panchaka. And the most of you must have by now heard about Bhishma. I think it was in the first part of the semester. And how Bhishma Dev was getting close to leaving his body, so he actually voluntarily fasted at the end in the last 5 days, and then he gave up his life. So this is when he did it in the time period. And it's a very special time in Kartik. Whatever you do during these 5 days actually is multiplied and is increased in its benefit and the mercy that we get. So if you had an intention for Kartik, but somehow life got in the way, you have another chance, and it's even the best chance. So these last 5 days, it's like a little hurdle. You can do something special for your relationship with Krishna. And so that's something. And then what's the third thing that's special? Yeah. So Gorky Shordas Babaji Maharaj's disappearance day. And that's who I'm going to speak about today. So first of all, it's really interesting how we observe disappearance days in our tradition. And in some ways, disappearance days are given more value or more are more honorific than even appearance days. And it's interesting because when a great personality appears in this world, the world hasn't yet discovered who that person is. He's still kind of a mystery. And by the time that person leaves the planet, that person has exhibited his or her great spiritual traits and qualities and has kind of blossomed. There's a Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this kind of blossoming of a great person as a lotus flower. You know how lotuses, they're closed, and then over the lifespan of the great personality, this lotus flower is opened, and you get to see all the wonderful attributes of this person. So that's why at the disappearance day is really special. And whoever was around that person during that person's lifetime will have even like sweeter memories and even more feel intense separation from that person, which is another reason that disappearance days are special. Because our philosophy is really the ultimate pinnacle of it is reaching that place of feeling constant separation from Krishna, as the gopis of Vrindavan do. And when we get this opportunity to celebrate a disappearance day, it's an opportunity for us to feel some separation from a personality who has left. Now, how do we do that with someone we've never met? So it's easier, say for example, there's someone in our midst who passes away, someone who has left a deep impression in our lives. That will be easy, right? Their disappearance day comes around and we will feel that connection because we have met them and we know we have that relationship with them. But in spiritual life, it's not dependent on time and space or even physical proximity or even having ever met the person. So the amazing thing is that we can develop relationships with people who are no longer physically present in spiritual life. And in some ways, that's very comforting. I don't know about you guys, but as a kid, I was always very, I'll say obsessed with. I would think a lot about death and about the fear of losing people that I loved and that separation, just that kind of finality of it. Even though I knew the philosophy, the emotional quality was still there, that feeling of impending grief, of anticipatory separation, kind of thinking about that. So when we get deeper in our spiritual life, we realize, yes, there's separation, but really that separation brings us closer to the person that we're feeling separation from. So in one sense, we're growing closer, and not even though it might look like physically we've grown further apart or by time or space, you know, like that, but we're actually growing closer with our heart and our soul connection with that person. So on these days, and I know there's a lot of them in the calendar, it can get kind of overwhelming, like, oh, another disappearance day, oh, another appearance day, another, you know. And sometimes when we're practicing in a spiritual tradition, it's easy to kind of fall into that routine. Like, oh, it's another fasting, and it's usually, oh, it's another fasting day, and oh, darn, we can't have breakfast. And it kind of becomes like a routine of just, you know, plowing through the calendar, not necessarily with that, or there could be a tendency to kind of just become impersonal about it, like, oh, this, check, check. So these days are opportunities for us to practice personalism as well. And our whole philosophy is about personalism, to get to know people, to get to build spiritual relationships. And these days give us that chance to think about a person that has passed away or that has appeared or has done something wonderful, like, for example, when Prabhupada crossed the Atlantic in the Jaladutta. That's a special day that he arrived. So those kinds of days we can work on our personalism. We can think, oh, today I'm gonna try to work on getting to know this person and understanding who they were and developing my relationship with them, because that is possible beyond time. Who here has been to a samadhi of a great person? So samadhi, yeah, okay, so about half of you. So samadhis are the places, are the resting places of these great persons. They're located in holy places, and they're like memorials, right? So the body was interned there, or the in some cases a pushpa samadhi, where the flowers that they were wearing last were interned under the ground, like at New Vrindavan. Most of you have been there, right? New Vrindavan in West Virginia. They have the Prabhupada's Palace of Gold, which is really the only pushpa samadhi of Srila Prabhupada in the West, because they took the flowers that he was wearing in his final days and they put them there underneath where Prabhupada's sitting in that main room, under the altar there, under the ground, they put Prabhupada's flowers. So it's a pushpa samadhi, a place to remember. And these samadhis, for those of you who've been, you must have experienced that when you're there, it's like a very special place, and you can feel that the presence of those people. If you take your japa bag and just go sit there for a few hours and just pray and chant, you will feel the connection. You'll feel that reciprocation from the person whose presence is there. So that's what's the mystical nature of spiritual life. Because in mundane life, if you go to a crematorium, you're not gonna feel that kind of spiritual reciprocation. At the best and worst, you might experience other things. So, so the samadhi places. So when you do get a chance to go, I would suggest just plan for a few hours, go to one place, and really go deep. Maybe read about that person before you get there, and then really pray to them as an individual person. And you can pray. That's the other thing about disappearance days. We can pray. We learn about the person, and then we can pray accordingly. So if that person was, say, for example, a really great, someone who shared Krishna consciousness with thousands of people, we can pray to that person, oh, please help me to also learn how to share Krishna consciousness so it becomes relevant and so that others are attracted. So in this case, Gaurakishore Das Babaji is well known for his renunciation. And so here let's sing this verse. This is the Pranam Mantra for Gaurakishore Das Babaji. So I'll read it. Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambujayate Namaha. Now everyone. Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambujayate Namaha. Let's do it two more times, okay? Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye English together. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who is renunciation personified. He is always merged in a feeling of separation and intense love of Krishna. So who can tell me what Sakshat Vairagya Murti is? Yeah, directly, the renunciation personified. So he really embodied that principle of spiritual life. And then the next line, Vipra Lamba Rasambode. Feeling separation, right? Vipra Lamba. So he's constantly feeling that intense love of Krishna through the mood of separation. Oh, Krishna, when will I see you again? And then the first line and the last line are prayer, like Namo Gaura Kishore, my obeisances, and then Padam Bhujayate Namaha. Lotus feet, right? Pada. So it's kind of sandwiched between there. So let's go to the next slide. So this is just kind of Disciplic Succession 101, just in case I didn't know who it might be here. So we can see here this picture, right? Prabhupada on the left, and then Bhakti Siddhanta. There's Gaura Kishore Das Babaji after Bhakti Siddhanta, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so there's interesting how Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, he was born in the 1830s, and he was actually illiterate. He never learned to read or write, which is unusual in our parampara. He's actually sitting between two great scholars who were brilliant philosophers and teachers of Krishna consciousness. So this shows you that the qualification for a guru or a saintly person is not material education. He was a great devotee of Krishna despite being illiterate. And he was the Diksha Guru of Bhaktisiddhanta. And then he took shelter, like Shiksha, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's why they're lined up that way. So he took instruction from him, even though he was initiated by a different person. And interestingly, even though we put them in this order, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is at the end, he also was really inspired by Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. Mm-hmm. And he took, at the end of his life, Babaji initiation from Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. So who knows what Babaji means? Or who can explain the title Babaji?
It's a person that relishes his own bhajan, his own practice of bhakti, and goes deep within it in concentration.
Right. Yeah. So I'll get there in 1 minute. I'm going to explain how he... So we don't know much about his youth. The only thing we know about Gaura Kishore Das Babaji is that he was married. And he was from a Vaishya family. Vaishyas were the ones who are business people. So when he got married, he actually was in the business of buying and selling grains. That was his livelihood. Then, when they were quite young, him and his wife passed away. And he took that... I guess as an indication that he should go for renunciation. So he didn't get remarried or anything. He walked all the way from, so he was born right near where Bangladesh is now. He walked all the way from there to Vrindavan, which is a super long walk. And so already he was demonstrating his renunciation, like, let me go for this long trek, which is very austere. So he arrived in Vrindavan and he ended up staying there for about 30 years in Vrindavan. When he was there, he got initiated by a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji, whose name was Bhagavat Das Babaji. So he took initiation from him. And he lived in the place of Srimati Radharani. You know, Varshana is where Srimati Radharani lived growing up. And he lived there for about 6 years. Every single day, he would make flower garlands. And that was his service there in Varshana. So going back to the title of Babaji. So he got this initiation, Babaji initiation, from his guru. Babaji at the time when he got this, sannyas wasn't actually that prominent of a position, sannyas that we know today, the celibate role of a monk, right? because that came, that was actually really brought back by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He really started that, sannyasis, you know, and then they're going around preaching Krishna consciousness. So at this time, when Gorkhishor Das Babaji took his initiation, he also renounced, so Babaji is renouncing material attachments, practicing celibacy, but doing so more, not so much in the purpose of going out and I'm going to go knock on doors and share Krishna consciousness, but doing it like Anantabalba said, to go internal and to strengthen your spiritual life. So he, chanting of Hare Krishna is a big prominent part of being a Babaji. Usually they chant at least 64 rounds a day. Very eating minimally and depending on Krishna. So that renunciation, the example that he gave us is that he would just depend on whatever food was brought to him. He would he didn't try to make arrangements for a kitchen and like going and getting, you know, buying things in the store. And he would walk around and let me see here. So no, what I wanted to say is that he, for his, what he would eat was actually rice that he had soaked. So people would donate like dried rice, or he would find rice anywhere, and then he would soak it in the Yamuna River. And he would eat that with a little bit of salt. So I guess it's just kind of soft, pretty hard still, right? Like it must be kind of crunchy. I was trying to picture what that would feel like.
Depending
how long he soaked it, right? Yeah. So, but still, it would be kind of austere if you soak it. And so he soaked it in the Yamuna River, so it's full of Yamuna water. And then he put a little salt and eat that. And that was his meals every day. So you can imagine he was quite emaciated too. He didn't get a lot of nutrition. But he kept his body and soul together through that, through eating. So that was his way of keeping his body together. Then for clothing, he would go to, who knows where he got his clothes?
Crematorium.
Yes, yeah. Crematorium, yes. Yeah, Shruti?
Well, there's another pastime where he got really nice. That's different.
Okay. So normally he would get his clothes, like his cloth, that he would just wrap around his waist from a crematorium where they burn the bodies. And he would just find like, oh, here's a, someone had a gumsha or whatever that was left behind from those dead bodies. And he would wash it and then wear that. So he was very austere, very simple life. And do you want to share your story now?
Yeah. Yeah, this one time, Gorkhishor Das Babaji was so frustrated because so many people had come to him and asked for boons and material boons and wealth and money and so forth. So he got this really nice dhoti, like really fancy silk. You know? So he actually wore that, and he went to the marketplace and walked in this really nice dhoti. And then his intention was that so that people look at him and think, oh, actually, he's not spiritual. He's wearing all this expensive cloth. So I said, yes, I'm a bogus Babaji. Yeah, so then he said, then the people just kind of left him alone for sure.
Yeah.
So he just wanted to be kind of what Ananda was saying, you know, alone and doing his bhajan.
Yes. Yeah, one of his pet peeves, you know that term, pet peeve, like things that irritate us. One of the things that really bothered him was actually that people would come to sadhus asking for material things. Please give me a blessing so that I can have a kid, or I can get a new house, or a wife, or a husband, or whatever. And that really irritated him. He wanted to be deeply immersed in Krishna throughout his life and didn't want to be disturbed. So he came up with all kinds of ingenious ways to keep people away. So in some ways, from our material, this is an important point. From our material perspective, if we met someone like Jagannath, like Gorkhishor Das Babaji, if we weren't aware of how saintly this person was and weren't wanting to understand that, if we were looking at him from a material perspective, then we would think, oh, he seems like an eccentric homeless man. And it's really, I remember this lecture, it stayed with me for about 15 years, where Satchinanda Maharaj talked about this tendency that, tendency to sometimes judge devotees based off of externals, and it can be very dangerous. He mentioned in that class that, he said, what if Rupa and Sanatan walked in right now? would we think, oh, who are those bums? Who are those, you know, like, and what are they doing here? They look disheveled and dirty and, oh, you know, like that. Would our response be that? Or would we be able to look beyond that external and realize these are great transcendental people? Mm-hmm. So that really stuck with me because I, it made me realize that how many times I've done that, looked at people by the external and made an assumption about who they were. So here we have a person like Gorkhasirdas Babaji who externally looks like kind of like he's lost it in a way, mentally. Like he was going around the Yamuna River, walking along the banks, crying out, chanting, sometimes rolling on the ground, sometimes laughing hysterically, all because of that ecstatic connection he was feeling from Krishna through separation, which is interesting. So he felt very, very close to Krishna through that. Can you click the next? So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then the next one. So here is the only photo we have of Gorkhasirdas Babaji. And this photo is actually taken when he was, when he moved to Navadvip, he used to sit underneath or kind of next to the shelter of boats, overhanging boats, to keep dry. That was his home. He would go to the side of the Ganges and sit under boats. So again, like talking about how he would keep people away, he would find places that were that people wouldn't want to go. Or he, like in this situation when he was with the boats, he took fish bones and scattered it all around where he was living. So people were like, oh, that guy eats fish, or that, you know, like he wanted to keep people away. Then another thing he would do is, like at one point, this couple who were wealthy, they said to him, can we offer a place for you to live? And can we have you come and stay in our guest facilities because you have no home and we would like to do that service for you? And he said, no, I would, let me tell you what he said. I am disturbed by the many insincere devotees constantly hanging around me. They're not actually interested in spiritual life, but only in making a big show and getting money. He continued, it would be a great help if you would allow me to stay in the toilet of your guest house. It is easier for me to tolerate the bad smell than to tolerate insincere, materialistic devotees. And surely the smell would also keep them away. The couple were very surprised by his request, but they wanted to serve him. So therefore, they nicely cleaned up the narrow toilet of the guest house and Gorkhasir moved in. So he found places like that where it was like the latrine, the place where people would go to use the bathroom. And he would make that his. He was clean. He was a clean person. He would clean an area, but it would kind of keep people away. So he lived for 30 years in Vrindavan. Then, and when he was there, another thing he would do is he was an Uttama Adhikar, which means that he didn't distinguish between any living entities. He saw them all as spiritual parts of Krishna. And he would pay obeisances to even the plants and the flowers of Vrindavan. Mm. He had, instead of regular, like the japa beads we have, the wooden ones, he knotted together cloth, and this was common in the day, that you had a string of cloth, and they were like knots, 108 knots, and so he would chant on that. And then he would carry, the only possession he had besides that was two books. Do you know who the books were by? Or books meaning probably bundled, parchment paper, but not necessarily like bound books. Two books by Narottam Das Thakur. So Prarthana and Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Those are two song books by Narottam Das Thakur, which had beautiful songs of feelings of separation from Krishna. So he carried that with him. And one time, somebody asked him, how can I, so he would get these questions. So people would come, you know, even though he created this space, people who were sincere would seek him out and they knew that he was a devotee. So they would come with questions. One person asked, how can I achieve prema? And he said, all you need is five paisa, which I don't know what that was worth at the time, probably very, very minimal, like a few cents or a cent or something. And you take that, you go to the market and you buy these two books. and you will find love for Krishna through those books. So that was his answer.
What are the books again?
Prema Bhakti Chandrika and Artha. Yeah, two song books by Narottam Das.
But he was illiterate.
And he was illiterate. Good point. Yes, he carried them with him even though he wasn't able to read them. He carried them. There's a similar story about that with the illiterate Brahmana who was holding the Bhagavad Gita and crying. Even though he couldn't read the text, he was still connecting with that book. So yeah, he carried those with him. I don't know. I mean, we don't know that much about him, so possibly he was able to recognize certain songs or read certain things. I'm not sure. But yeah, he carried those. And then, so then after about 30 years, he had this inspiration from within, Super Soul, to go to Navadvip in Bengal. So again, he walked back across that part of India and arrived in Navadvip. There he met Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he was very inspired by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He would sit in on his Bhaktivinoda Thakur's talks, discourses on Krishna consciousness. So even though, even though they had that relationship at the end, like I said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked him for Babaji initiation. So they were very tight, good friends. At that time, he met Bhakti Siddhanta, and he actually made one of those cloth japa beads and gave it to Bhakti Siddhanta. So can you click the next picture? So Bhakti Siddhanta is the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he would see him whenever he would go there to hear from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he gave him that cloth beads, which was probably a really wonderful gift to get from a great saintly person. At one point, Bhaktisiddhanta asked his father, "I want to take Krishna consciousness more seriously. What do I do? Like, who can I take initiation from?" And Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommended Gaurakishore Das Babaji. So Bhaktisiddhanta was a very, very intelligent person. He would hear something once and remember it. He was super bright. Scholar, Sanskrit scholar. His English was impeccable and way over my own head. Like, his vocabulary was incredible. And he, I'm telling you that because he was wanting to take initiation from a person who externally was illiterate, was not very involved in materials, like was on the fringes of material society or society at all, was in the eyes of many kind of this eccentric devotee. And he was able, him and his father both understood that Gaurakishore Das Babaji was a great person, and they could see that about him. So he went with great determination to go and ask for initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Now, Gaurakishore Das Babaji didn't initiate people. He, like we talked about before, he was very much of a recluse. He liked to do his own spiritual practice. And he immediately rejected Bhaktisiddhanta and said, "No, you're a scholar. I could never do this. You're Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, a scholar, great person. I'm nobody." And Bhaktisiddhanta kept pushing him, "Please, please, I want to take initiation from you." And he said, "Okay, I'll ask Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya, what I could do, or what he says I should do. And then come back in a few days." So Bhaktisiddhanta came back after a few days and said, "What did he say? What did Mahaprabhu tell you?" And he said, let's see what he said. He said, he didn't give me a direct answer. He simply said that material knowledge doesn't help in spiritual life. So you can imagine that was quite cutting, right? That was pretty shocking. There's another, that's one version. Another version says that he said to Bhaktisiddhanta, I forgot to ask. That was another one. So there's sometimes different anecdotes or different tellings of the story. So Bhaktisiddhanta, who at the time was called Bhima Prasad, that was his name, he begged and begged, and he said that, "Without your mercy, my life is meaningless." So you can see the humility of this great devotee, Bhaktisiddhanta. Despite his amazing knowledge, he still was so humble that he realized he needed that mercy of a great devotee. And he said, if you don't, and he gave his threat now. So he said, if you don't initiate me, I'm going to go. He actually stopped him on a bridge. They were on a bridge over the Ganges. And he said, I'm going to jump off and I'm going to end my life if you don't give me shelter. And of course, Gorkha Sherdas Babaji is a very compassionate person. And he saw the sincerity. And he said, okay. And he was pleased with his sincerity. He said, go take a bath and I'll initiate you. There's the only rendition that I saw of this is in the film Abhay Charan. They have a little film of this part of the film where they show the scene, and it's really touching. So then he gave him the Gayatri Mantra. He initiated him, and he was the only disciple of Gorkha Sherdas Babaji. It's similar to other stories we've heard about. Interestingly, with Narottam and his spiritual master, Lokanath Das Goswami. So you see that pattern. I just thought that was kind of an interesting connection because he loved Narottam's books. And then Narottam had done the same with his guru, like begging and begging and like doing menial service to clean his spiritual master's place, and ultimately became the only disciple of his guru too. So they had this sweet connection between all three of them, the family, like Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the family, and then this Gorkha Sherdas Babaji. And he would, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, for those of you who've recently been to Mayapur, I think Gorkha Sherdas Babaji has a bhajan kutir there, or was that Jagannath Das Babaji? At Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. I think there was a place where he would sit. He would,
I think it is there.
Gorkha Sherdas Babaji, right?
Yeah. I think like Bhaktivinoda Thakur kind of built.
Yeah, a little place for him to sit, and so he would. Yeah, so he was part of the family. At one point, he lost his eyesight, and you can imagine that. You can go back one picture. That's him. So he lost his eyesight, and he was so absorbed in spiritual life that it didn't really matter that he had lost his vision. I mean, it probably happened over the course of several years. He went blind, and his spiritual life was so internal and so deep, it wasn't dependent on anything external, that he was almost oblivious to the fact that he was blind. At one point, he actually showed up at Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. Even though he was blind, the devotees discovered him there. He had wandered from where he was at all the way, and he made his way to Lord Chaitanya's birthplace and was chanting there. So he had that inner spiritual map. His vision was much deeper than our material, the eyes. Someone said to him, there was always these sincere people that came into his life and said, please, let me help you and take you to a doctor in Calcutta, because they had, at that time, this was the early 1900s, they had already people that could do surgery and could help with eyesight. And he immediately said, no, I don't want to go to the material world, because Calcutta was a city that had a lot of materialists, and so he rejected that, and he would prefer to stay blind than to leave Mayapur Navadvip Dham and go to Calcutta. So Mayapur Navadvip is the place where Lord Chaitanya was born. I forgot to mention that. So that's where he stayed for the rest of his life. And then because he was so close with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur passed away in 1913, or 1914, Gorkha Sherdas Babaji felt intense separation from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he passed away the next year. So you can see that these relationships are so deep, and they go beyond material circumstances. They transcend material designations, knowledge, caste, whatever, those things, especially in India, which are very much more prevalent, that are talked about, this caste, that caste. So these spiritual relationships go beyond all of that. And when these great devotees would see another person that they could share about Krishna with, they would immediately connect at the heart level and talk about Krishna and lose track of time and just go on and on and on. Who here has experienced that? Where you've lost yourself in a discussion about Krishna? Yeah? That you've lost track of time, let's say even 5 minutes. I mean, it's a starting point, right? So, and I'm sure we all have. So when we come in contact, and I know that all of you, the reason that you're all here, one of the reasons is because of that, is like seeking out others who you can talk to about your spiritual realizations. That's why we have a community. And so even though we might not be at the advanced stages of forgetting everything else and just talking about Krishna, we do know what that's like to find a friend, somebody who can understand our particular way of relating to Krishna. And it's actually, it's even among all the devotees, it's rare to find someone who really shares a similar, because we all have our unique relationships with Krishna, right? So to find someone that you can really connect with in that, like, the deepest way that you can share your spiritual realizations with is rare. And so they really valued each other's friendship. Now, I want to just mention one thing. So there's these Sanskrit terms, Goshtananandi and Bhajananandi. So Bhajananandi is what Gorky Shardas Babaji was. So he was absorbed in bhajan, absorbed in chanting about Krishna, and not necessarily seeking out others to preach to. If they came to him, he would talk about Krishna. But he just stayed in his own place. Whereas what's a Goshtananandi? A preacher, someone who wants to share about Krishna with other living entities. So that's the difference. So normally in our disciplic succession, we see we actually see a mix of these two qualities. We see devotees who are more inner focused, and then devotees who are more focused on sharing with others. And neither of them are, I mean, both of them are wonderful. So because some people might think, well, what did Gorky Shardas Babaji do if he was just in his own space, like chanting? How does that help the Sankirtan mission? But he gave us, every devotee gives us a specific realization that we can apply to our lives. And he gave us the example of forgetting or sort of renouncing material attachment and focusing on Krishna, and showed us how important that is to go deep in spiritual life. And even though we might have different circumstances, we might have, later on down the road, careers, families, whatever, busyness of material life, jobs, school, graduate school, all those things, we can still, there's something about seeing his renunciation that can still inspire us. And for these last 5 days of Kartik, if you want to meditate on, like I was saying, you can find a specific prayer for these personalities, right? So if you want to think about something you can pray to Gorky Shardas Babaji, this great person who gave up everything just to focus on Krishna. So we can pray for that, even one drop of that. Like, hey, these last 5 days of Kartik, my dear Gorky Shardas Babaji, may I go maybe renounce one thing, that maybe a little, like a few minutes less on Facebook, or something that might be getting in the way of your... Like renouncing one thing. So there's two sides of it. There's renouncing something that's getting in the way of spiritual life, and then there's filling that time with something positive. So we can see both in his life. He renounced eating fancy and finding a home and mortgage and all that, jobs and all that. But on the other side, what did he fill his time with? It wasn't that he was renouncing in the mode of ignorance, like, oh, I'm just going to go veg out somewhere. That would be renunciation in the mode of ignorance, and that we see sometimes, like if a person is just kind of wandering, doesn't have a home, just drifting and drinking and whatever, that's renunciation in the mode of ignorance. But his renunciation was so that he could have more time to chant, filling up all the hours as possible, sleeping less, all that, right? So, so what can we pray to him to help us maybe go one step closer to that? Not artificially, but like, what could I renounce in the last 5 days of Kartik? Something small, it could be big, whatever you feel is comfortable for you, so that I can fill that time with something a little extra for Krishna. So we can all think about that. Maybe just take a moment now. Just close your eyes for a minute. think about this great personality and offer that prayer to him, some prayer for what you think you could do in the last 5 days of Kartik. Thank you. And you can continue that on. Obviously, that's your inner journey with these great people. So, and he will reciprocate with you. He was a very kind person and actually had a good sense of humor, too. There was one other story I wanted to share. Here's a nice picture of him on the banks where the boats were with his Japa beads. This is actually a nice book. It's like for young adults or children. They have these illustrations. So there's a story here. He seldom preached, but was very direct when he did. Once, a pious and generous Vaishnava king wanted Gaura Kishore to come and live in his palace. So all these people were kept offering, please, you know, we want to help you. Because they thought, oh, he's homeless. He needs a place to stay. Gaura Kishore was moved by the king's invitation, but sent back this message. I do not want to go, because living in such a rich palace, I would grow to like it too much and become envious. Better you give up your kingdom and wealth and join me on the banks of the Ganges. I will build you a nice shack like my own, and together we can live peacefully, chanting the holy names of the Lord. Quite expectedly, he never heard from the king again. So he had that sense of humor. And then the last thing I want to share is one time he once told his servant, someone who was taking care of him, tomorrow's the disappearance day of Sanatan Goswami, so we are going to feast. The boy was startled and asked him, how are we going to collect for such a big feast? Gaura Kishore answered him, we're not going to have a feast like that. We're going to fast and sit and chant the Hare Krishna mantra throughout the entire day. This is the best feast day for poor people like us. So you can see how he, when we hear about these personalities, we realize they're people and they have their humor and their wonderful way of connecting others to Krishna, their endearing ways. So thank you all for being here and hearing those stories. And if there's any questions or comments, yeah.
In relation to Vajranandi and Goshanandi, would it be wrong for us to not imitate Gaura Kishore Das Babaji because of like the preaching mission, or is it dependent on devotee's individual mood and relationship with Krishna? Because once my spiritual master, he told Srila Prabhupada, I chanted 32 rounds, and he said, and he was, you know, proud of it, and Srila Prabhupada said, chant 16 rounds and go out and preach.
Right.
So.
Yes, and that's a really good question, and it's very important for that conversation to happen between the devotee and their spiritual master or spiritual mentors. For example, there's another story where Malati Devi was in Vrindavan, and she was very sick, and all she could do was chant. She was in bed, and she said to Prabhupada, I'm so sorry, all I could do is chant all day. And he said, it's like an opposite kind of story where he said, actually, that is the ultimate business, but I'm just trying to keep you all busy so that your minds are engaged. But our ultimate position is to chant all day. So we get both of these examples and direction. So ultimately, it's not... spiritual life is often about not this or this, but both. And it's difficult to find that balance sometimes in our lives. So that's why we need guidance. So what it might look like for some of us is... a portion of our day going out, staying busy, helping others come to Krishna consciousness, and then having a part of it where we are recharging internally with our relationship with Krishna. And when we have a good balance, and that'll look different for each one of us, like we talked before about in another class about introverts and extroverts and personality traits. Some people are more inclined towards alone time than others. When we've worked that out with our spiritual mentors, then we can find that balance that is uplifting us and filling our own spiritual cup so that it pours over and inspires others. So it's kind of, it's not this or that, but it's finding both within our heart, within our lives. Yes?
I was wondering if you could explain how is it that people who leave their bodies, we could still communicate with them?
how we can still communicate with them?
Yeah, how is it that we still feel their presence?
Right.
Because they're the jivas too.
Yeah, so these great personalities have come from the spiritual world to help us, right? So they're performing these pastimes, and then when they leave, they're still present through prayer and sound and all that, like when we hear about them or when we read what they've written, because these are spiritual things. They transcend that. They go beyond the material bodies, beyond the end of one life and the start of another. Because we're all serving Krishna, Krishna is the person who carries all of those relationships, who kind of is the you could say the archivist of relationships and remembering different how different devotees interacted and stuff. So he carries all of that. He maintains it all. It's never lost. And because our relationship with Krishna is never lost, similarly, our relationship with these devotees who are all attached and attracted, all part of Krishna and all there with Krishna is also never lost. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.